This is a Rooster Teeth production.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Rooster Teeth podcast. I'm Gus.
Oh, I'm Gavin.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Barbara.
And Gus. Furry.
How do I make you quiet?
I'm loud.
You're so loud.
We're in our temporary audio space. The main space is being used for something else right now. I walked in there. I forgot that we were in this room today.
You didn't put it on the calendar invite.
I don't. I know. I'm the one who wrote
you
it.
You wrote it.
Because I thought something else was going to be filming there today, but the other thing got postponed. I thought, oh, maybe we're back in there. And I walked in, and they were filming something I wasn't expecting.
So I mean, how would
like
they
the Grandpa
know
Simpson thing
that we were going to be in there at 5 o'clock on a Monday?
Yeah, who knows?
There's no way they could have known.
No way to predict it.
Unknowable.
I do like doing it in here, though. I actually, I was looking forward to doing the podcast in here.
We do Tales from the Stinky Dragon in here. I don't know if we mentioned that last time that we were in here for RT podcast.
I think we did. I think we mentioned that we do like all the not all of them, but most of the audio podcasts in here. You guys did a Bleep Face in here for the first time in person, right?
Did a little office day.
Yep.
Do they have to drag all this setup in and out of here every time you guys do a different
show? They don't.
Thank God.
I think they bring in stuff.
The cameras.
Okay, thank God. Yeah. My heart just sank for the behind the scenes, all the tech people and the people running the show and broadcast.
If they had to move that shit.
If they didn't move that shit every time, like it's like, oh no, we're moving it out. They're doing the podcast in here. No,
we talked about this recently, but there was one episode of the podcast we did back at the old studio when we were in the annex, mm-hmm. and like 10 minutes before we went live, the place where the electricity comes from the pole into our building exploded and melted.
Mm-hmm.
So we had no power. So we had to pick up every camera and light we could and then run across the parking lot to our other studio and set it up to live stream from there. And that was like a mad dash. I was like everyone grabbing as much equipment as they could and running.
Yeah, that was where we ended up back in the conference room.
Right.
Right where we used to do it.
Right.
Yeah, that was fun.
that was madness. I went out of town. I went to Vegas last week.
Brag about it.
It was nice. It was hot as hell.
On your monthly vacation?
Did you go see the 7 inches of Lake Mead that's still left?
So I got in a taxi there. I was taking a cab. I forget where I was going. But it's one of those rides where it starts out and the cab driver's totally normal. And then by the end of it, he was talking about how the drought in the Western United States was a hoax. And how water was just being dumped into the ocean. And I was like, but I've seen the photos of Lake Mead. It's low. Yeah, it's low because they're dumping it all out into the ocean. They're doing that to artificially increase the price of electricity and water.
Like they're just turning on a thing and draining it?
Right.
Or they're like helicoptering it out?
No, like they're just letting it go. They're like opening a spigot and draining Lake Mead into the ocean. It's like, I don't think that's how that works.
It really is crazy the length some people go to rationalize things that they don't understand in their brain. To come up with these like insane conspiracies is just like...
I don't think these people are coming up with anything.
But I just like, I have to... No, I know. It's definitely not like their own thought. I think it's definitely something that's like a public conspiracy theory. But it's also like, who's doing it? Who's dumping the water? Why those people?
Who is they? Cui bono? Who benefits? Like who benefits from that? Like wild. It's like it would take so much more energy to pump water from Lake Mead, like an eighth of the way across the country, because Vegas is not super close to the ocean.
Significantly inland.
Yeah, it's significantly inland. Like to pump that amount of water all the way to the ocean would require way more energy than I think you would get from like raising like water electricity prices.
Now you got to pay 4 cents more for a kilowatt.
It's just like that makes no financial sense to any like on any area.
I think aren't the electricity rates in you don't live there. I don't know why I'm looking at you. Aren't the electricity rates in England about to go up like 80%
because of Ukraine, Russia?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Like next month. The electricity bills or whatever they pay for power is going to go up like 80%.
But you got Truss there. Boris is out. It's
Truss is out.
You got Liz Truss.
She's in.
I know nothing about this person. I don't know. Yeah. Just like okay, cool. I guess I don't know who this is.
She's basically the last thing the Queen did. I think was and state her as
I feel
prime.
Like Liz Truss is forever going to be like that what eventually will be like that obscure prime minister trivia fact. Like, who was the last prime minister to visit the Queen, or the first prime minister to visit King Charles? It's like, it's going to be Liz Truss. She will forever be remembered and be a bit of trivia just because of the timing of her taking over the prime minister office.
I read a fact that when the Queen became Queen, Winston Churchill was in as prime minister, and him and Liz Truss were born 101 years apart.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
That doesn't... My brain cannot, like... I can't.
She was also the queen for 1400 U.S. presidents.
1400
14 U.S. presidents, which is 30% of the presidents.
We've had... Biden is 46.
Yeah, and I think she was in at like 32 or something.
Oh my God. I also know, like, I think it was Justin Trudeau was saying that, like, there were 17 prime ministers or something like that in Canada during her reign.
Reign.
Or something like that.
The conversion makes sense. 17, 14.
Yeah, there you go.
It's about right.
Yeah. Did anyone else text Gavin the second they heard the queen died? Because I did. I was like, damn, sorry about your queen. Because it's, I mean, like, you know, obviously she reigned for a very long time, but also, like, it's your queen. She's been the queen as long as like multiple generations of your family, and it must have been like bit of a shock.
I think it's quite shocking just because she was the queen so long.
Yeah,
like she was the queen when my grandparents were teenagers. Like it's like that's to that extent
when they
like,
were dancing to Chubby the Twist, yeah. As we discussed earlier. Yeah, the number one hit for the longest time.
But yeah, well, I wasn't sad or anything. It was she lived a damn long time.
Very long. Yeah.
Time. Quite expected.
How old was she?
96.
Yeah. It's the age where it's like the shock comes because of the reign of tenure, not that a 96-year-old woman has shuffled off this mortal coil. That is much more understandable.
And it is weird to say you like long live the king now when the king is like 73 years old or something. How old is Charles? He's up there.
He finally got a job. Congrats to him.
Yeah. Bravo.
73 years old.
That resume is just... Hummed just one sentence long. Marge Homemaker, 1980 to present.
What's the next potential queen in the succession? It's like not for like another what six or seven different.
I think it's like
levels?
Three or four.
Oh really? That's
it's
it? Okay.
Charlotte. And I just because I read a fucking story about it. It's
about,
Charlotte's the kid of William.
William, right?
I believe so.
But if William's Caitlin. Son has a kid. Then it'll be him, right?
Unless it's a daughter.
Right. But still, it'll be a different woman.
Right.
And so. then it transfers to John Goodman at some point.
Did you see the graphic of all the generations of corgis that she had? She had like one corgi that was a descendant, like 16 generations up from all. It's like a dog family tree. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like this corgi was like a descendant of the first corgi on the British Isles. Like it's like this one's been here since like the Romans came. Like
it's telling other dogs to leave the country.
I wonder if anyone ever told the Queen adopt don't shop.
Here's an etching of the first corgi here next to Hadrian's Wall. It's like good Lord.
Oh yeah, I've seen
they could be traced back to multiple corgi generation.
Thanks Tyler, he sent me the info on it. She was given her first corgi as a gift on her 18th birthday in 1944. It was a corgi named Susan. Which seems like
that seems like what a corgi's name would be like in 1944.
Susan.
Susan,
Ethel, Margaret, Olivia. Just
Barbara.
Barbara, yes.
But then Sugar's offspring were named Sugar and Honey. It's like you go from a very serious person's name to like, yeah, then like kooky dog names after that.
Cookie is a good dog name.
Oh, that would be.
They had to tell the bees. I heard that. You have to tell the royal bees that the queen has passed.
Is that the origin of the saying? Go whisper to the bees?
Yep. Mm. You have to go tell. You have to go tell the bees that.
What are the bees?
In the royal bees. Apiary, the like actual honey bees. Actual bees. Yeah.
Do you just go?
They gotta just know who they're working for.
Yeah. Yeah. No, literally, like you have to like the royal beekeeper has to go and be like, the queen is dead. But good news, there's Charles and
not your queen.
Not
your
not
queen.
Your queen.
Still, you're still
like, yeah, they freak out. They have to go tell them that yeah, the queen is dead, or like you have to tell the bees certain things, like when someone dies, when someone gets married, and something else. There's like three things you're supposed to do.
Is this a real thing?
Yes.
And you tell
tradition
them
in
English?
It's tradition. Yeah. But I think I don't know if it's an English tradition. I think it might be. It might be just a folklorish tradition, not necessarily a royal one, but I'm not sure. I just like heard about it.
At this point, the monarchy is a weird tradition.
Yeah. I watched this.
Sorry, real fast, before you follow up on this. I just want to read this headline from Vanity Fair.
Mm-hmm.
The Queen's bees have been informed of her passing.
It is an important step.
All 80,000 of them mm-hmm. have
the Queen's bees.
You're supposed to cover, like, I think I read somewhere, like, you're supposed to cover the beehives in, like, black cloth. No joke. You're supposed to cover them in black cloth
they're
the very morning.
Morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah.
I didn't realize that the bees were such sensitive souls.
You're supposed to invite them to like, major weddings. That was the other thing. So it was, like, birth, deaths, and weddings.
How would you bring them? Do they all wear tuxedos?
You're just supposed to invite them. They're just like, it's one of those things where like, I just want to be invited. I'm not going to go. But
what?
Just like invite.
Well, what if they show up, then your meal counts all off?
Exactly.
Yeah. RCB.
How many generations of bees did the queen oversee? That's what I want to know.
She had the original bees that were brought over.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why one of the corgis' name was Honey. Who knows?
Ooh.
I saw this whole mini documentary about what happens when the queen dies. It's called like Operation London or London Bridges Down, I think is what they say.
Okay.
London Bridges. Not Operation. London Bridges Down, I think is what it's
say Operation like. London Broil. Like, what?
And apparently like all newscasters before reporting on it have to like change to like black clothing, and like there's all these different steps that happen, and like all these different scenarios of like where she passes and what happens depending on where she passes, and what the whole like what happens to London when it happens, like the whole city shuts down, all the flags go in half mast, like all these different steps that it takes, and it's like wildly complicated.
I'm sure she wouldn't even want that, like,
right?
She was pretty no fuss, like when she was queen for like 90 years, she was like, look, some people live a long time, all right, it's just what happens. I'm queen because I've lived a long time. Crack on.
Yeah, it's funny. I was trying to think like, oh, what can we talk about? Is there any news? No, it was like most of the day I was thinking about it, and then like right before we came, like, oh right, yeah, the queen died. Yeah.
What? But there's new iPhones, Gus.
There are new iPhones. Dynamic Island.
Did you hear about the new feature? Now you don't have to worry about the SIM tray because it's not in there.
It's not in. Yeah.
What's a SIM tray?
It's where
a SIM card would be.
Yeah, exactly.
They're basically promoting the fact that they removed the SIM tray.
Yeah,
as a feature that you no longer. Hey, guess what?
There's no longer this little tiny inconsequential sliver right here.
But gone. You know what? I wasn't actually that worried about that. That was fine in there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was losing no sleep about having a SIM tray.
The only thing that bothers me about it is that something could happen to the SIM. Like it could break or it could stop being read. Like I've transferred my SIM between a few different mm-hmm. phones now. And so the SIM in my phone is several generations of phone old.
Oh, I have no problem with eSIM. I use it.
Yeah.
But if I want to nip back to England, I could just shove my English SIM in,
but you
and
could
it works.
Use it as a virtual eSIM.
I could, but I can't convert my current UK SIM into an eSIM from here. I'd have to like go in.
Do you not have a plan on your phone that just lets you use your phone internationally as you would in the US?
Yeah.
Oh, then why do you need a different SIM?
All right, just so I can people who know I'm home can use my old number.
Because it's Gavin and he wants to make it needlessly complex.
Yeah.
I mean, I can. They're both in there. The UK SIM is in there and the US is an eSIM, but now they're both going to be eSIM.
Did you have to
great
tell
feature.
Your UK SIM that the Queen passed away?
I did. I put it in black cloth.
Okay.
And I shoved it in and I broke the SIM tray.
Okay.
You have to whisper to it.
I mean, it's just the way that they describe the removal of something as like a great thing. It's just like,
subtractive innovations where it's like we've made this better by taking something away.
Yeah,
we've made it better by.
Did they change the way the camera looks? I know some people had issues with like the three.
It's largely the same.
Is it not just two now?
That's the four. The Pro still has three.
Okay.
The regular one has two.
Yeah, there was like rumors that it was no longer it was going to be recessed, so you wouldn't have this like
little
you know.
Piece that stuck out. Yeah.
Yeah, but not this time. Not this time, baby.
Didn't you used to have an Android?
Mm-mm.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of Drew.
Oh, yeah.
Drew had an Android. Now he has an iPhone.
I think he gave in. I think, yeah. I think he finally switched. But no, yeah, I'm, I was thinking about that when I got this one. I was just like, and then they announced the 14. I was like, when is the next thing? You know what I mean? Like, when is the next, not evolution, but revolution going to come in that technology? Because I feel like, for the most part, we're just kind of like tinkering with like small things, mm-hmm. and like just kind of like majoring in aesthetics. It's one of those things like, I don't even think we've thought of it yet. I don't even think that we've gotten to like...
It'll be a while. I feel like every major step forward like that, you're looking at like 20, 25 years, if you're lucky, for something to happen. Like, I mean, the internet really took off in what, 94 is when it really started exploding. Then, you know, cell phones in 98 or so, 97.
Yeah.
It's when they became a lot more accessible. And then, I mean, we're looking at like a smartphone like we know it today in 2007. So, yeah, I mean, there's... I guess it's been a while then.
Yeah.
So 15 years now. Yeah. We're closing in on it.
I'm like thinking, like, you know, I was having this discussion a little while ago just about like how the, like, we did it with trains. Like, trains are it. That is like, that is the pinnacle of like moving lots of people vast distances very quickly for very cheaply. It's trains. It's always been trains. We figured it out. The next, like, there's not the next thing to like revolutionize. It's going to have to be such a gigantic leap in technological advancement. Like, we can't, so it's gonna be teleportation.
It went from like trains to smartphones to something else.
Yeah, it's like whatever that next thing is, because like everyone's trying to like reinvent. Masterhead's like, oh no, it'll be this, like, it'll be some stupid hyperloop thing. It's like, no. That's
dumb.
That's really stupid. It's trains. It's always been trains for, in terms of like efficiency in moving large groups of people vast
distances.
What
would you count, like, maglev as like a new? Well, that's still a train though, isn't it?
It's still a train.
Does that count as just like a train improvement, but not like a new thing?
Yeah,
that's fast train.
It's a fast train. No. Maglev and like Japanese trains that like go like 700 miles an hour or something insane, like, awesome, great, but it's still like the same essential technology of like, yeah, crane cars. It really is, in my mind, it's really just going to be like, okay, the thing that after trains is like faster than light or teleportation. It's got to be something. it's got to be something like that just completely changes
trains, like, maybe 200 miles an hour to faster than light.
Yeah, that's exactly. No, I mean, but like, what, like, either that, because other than that, it's just making trains faster and
Yeah, you want it to not be a tube full of people moving. It needs to be a new thing.
It can be a tube full of people that all get teleported together.
Yeah, exactly. They get Cronenberged together in some weird goop.
Have you ever read about how trains have a relatively low maximum grade that they can go up as far as an incline? Because the wheels make such a small surface area contact with the rails.
Oh, because they're not like grip.
Right. Like, each wheel of a train, the contact surface with the rail is about the size of a postage stamp.
What?
Shit.
Yeah. So the maximum grade they can go up is typically for a high speed railway between 2.5 to 4%. And for a freight train, it should be like 1.5%. So it's a very slight incline that they can go up, and that's it. Anymore,
I guess I've never really.
And they start. Slipping.
I guess I've never really seen like a whole like upward slant that a train has gone up before.
Because it's impossible.
It's impossible. Yeah. Never really.
Yeah, you'd need
that.
Like a jet assist or something on the back.
Right. That'd have
or
to be something
really
else
strong caboose.
That's a great piece of information that I will just like neatly tuck away in my brain and never think about because it's like a little disturbing to think about. That
oh
it's
no,
like,
you're gonna pull it out sometime, a conversation 5 years from now with a random group of people at a bar, going, "Hey,
I think I read this like 5 years ago." Yeah. It's like one of those things that's been like brewing around in the back of my brain. Like, one day we're gonna talk about trains on the podcast, and I'm gonna have this ready back there.
Train is absolutely the superior method of transportation, right?
Yeah. Slower than fly.
I don't care.
It's okay. More.
It's so comfortable. You get on, you put your bag away, and it's like you could get up and walk around. You could do all the things. You could use the bathroom. You could eat. You could sleep. Like, all that stuff. And it's very comfortable. And also, just like getting to look out the window, it's usually like a fun, easy way to pass the time.
Plus, you don't have to wait 30 minutes after takeoff to get up and use the bathroom.
Exactly. Also, well, not. I mean, that's, I guess, a selling point. No traffic or delays usually, right?
I've
been on some
I mean, there's some
trains.
Delays, but not like air flying.
I would say that trains in every trains in every other country are better than trains here. I took a sleeper car train from here to Chicago, and because the commuter rail Amtrak lines use the same rails as the freight lines, anytime there's a freight train on the rails, they have right of way because they are commercial. So the commuter trains, the like Amtrak people trains, have to go off on switch tracks and let those by. It took 12 hours to get from Austin to the Texas border.
Oh my God. It would be faster to drive.
It 100% would have been. Like, you can get from Austin to the Texas border in 5 by car. Yeah. Like, you're there.
Yeah, but trains are so fun.
It is fun, except we stopped, we literally stopped every hour on a switch track and stopped there for at least 30 to 45 minutes. So you were doing that all the way to the Texas border. And eventually it took so long. Like, once we got out of Texas, it got a little bit better, but then it eventually took so long that I went with a friend of mine. We were going to Pitchfork Music Festival there in Chicago, and we were going to miss the first day because we were already like
the
so
whole
far
day.
Yeah. I shit you not, we got out in St. Louis and rented a car and drove the rest of the way, and we beat the train.
Did you flip off the train
as we went by? We beat the train there by 8 hours.
That's ridiculous.
Hey, that system doesn't work. This country is perfect as well. Inside, it's massive. It'd be great for a really fast, like, east to west train.
If there was a train we could take from here to LA, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Life changing.
Yeah, just hop on the train.
Even throughout
New York, St. Louis, St. Louis, Dallas, and then Dallas, Los Angeles, Los Angeles, Seattle.
It was probably only cost about $50 trillion to put that into effect.
We build it bit by bit. Let's start with Central Texas. Connect Austin, Dallas, and Houston. And if there's enough money left over, San Antonio. Sorry, Andrew.
I mean, San Antonio is only an hour and a half from Austin.
Yeah, I live in Austin, so that's what's important to me.
If we need to cut something, I'm just saying. Just down 35.
It's a different subject.
How much have the U.S. government spent on rail?
I think... I'll look it up.
Okay.
But I think a good tangential question to that is how much have the airlines been subsidized by the government? And could that money be used to invest in rail instead?
Ooh.
U.S. government.
I think that the big thing that, like, you know, the argument from the massive oil lobby that keeps commuter rails going from coast to coast is that I think it's like, oh, people, like, will lose out on, like, profits from, like, driving across the country. It's like only from commuters, like, only from people who, like, I want to, like, take a road trip or, like, go to L.A. or something like that. Like, freight lines, like tractor trailers, that kind of stuff will still operate on oil and gas and, like, you know, driving across country because they have to, because it's such a, you know, weight and freight intensive thing. So it's like, just give me my commuter rail to Los Angeles. Just give me the one, the high speed train from here to, so I can get to Portland in less than, like, you know, 14 hours.
It looks like in 2020, $24.5 billion were spent on public transit and railroad construction in the United States.
$24 billion?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, $50 trillion? Easily.
You get there in a few years.
Do a whole train. You hear what happened to Jeremy this weekend? Coming in for Uno?
No.
Well, not just Jeremy, but a bunch of travelers. The Austin airport on, I believe it was Thursday morning?
I think it was Wednesday and Thursday both.
Lost power. Completely lost power. And so Jeremy's flight, I think, was going to get canceled, and he got on a flight to Dallas and then drove to Austin.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I think on Wednesday, it was out for like 3 or 4 hours.
In the morning?
In the morning. And then on Thursday, it went out again, but it was a shorter time on Thursday. I want to say it was like an hour maybe on Thursday.
I think it was Wednesday he was coming in.
Shouldn't a building that important be connected multiple times to the grid? How do they have a power?
There's like
failure?
A transformer that bursts.
I believe so.
Yeah, but still, it goes through one transformer. Have two. What do you mean? It's an airport.
Pretty important,
right? I'll go on a limb. Three. let's get three.
That's like nuclear power plant levels of connections.
Even when, you know, we had our website hosted in a data center in South Austin, it had 3 different points where power came into the building, and they made it a point to put it on different sides of the building.
Yeah.
That way, you know, there was no like one point of fail. Like, oh, if the lines get knocked down there, it's still coming in on this other side.
Mm-hmm. No, ABIA is a extension cord hooked up, just like running through the grass.
It's just plugged into Dallas through one extension.
It's plugged into a power strip with a little switch on it, but it doesn't have a red light, so you don't know which side is on and which one's off.
You gotta like, if you're outside, you gotta be like,
is it?
There are
and
so
it's just
many
like flickering. I guess that's getting.
There are so many things about the Austin airport that are so fucking stupid.
Hey, we're back.
Hey, but especially, I don't know if you guys have had to take an Uber from like getting into Austin to wherever you need to go, but you need to walk like 6 fucking miles to get to the Uber station at the Austin.
It is
airport.
A trek.
Yeah, and most airports really have done that to remove the congestion by the doors.
By the, yeah.
Which I get, but like have some type of shuttle or some type of thing going by. Like I just had relatives in town who are in their late 70s, early 80s, and they were talking about how like they had to get a taxi to get to like another place and like another
they
place.
Were in their late 70s when they started. They were in their early 80s when they got there.
Right.
But I think you hit the nail on the head there, Barbara. I think a lot of that is the taxi industry muscling out ride shares. Because the taxis are still right in front of the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And like they want to make the taxi the more convenient option you see first before you keep walking, having to head over for a rideshare pickup.
Rideshare, yeah.
Mm.
I just park at the airport now every time I travel.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like, I'm not dealing with that Uber situation.
This episode of the Rooster Teeth Podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp Online Therapy. When you're dealing with a particularly difficult or challenging time in life, it can be hard to stay in problem-solving mode. It's really easy to feel stuck or like you don't know what to do next. Or sometimes you can just get so caught up in focusing on the problem, you don't even consider possible solutions. So where do you go from there? Well, a therapist can help you work towards becoming a better problem solver, making it easier to accomplish your goals, no matter how big or small that they might be. Therapy can be a great tool for reducing your day-to-day stress, helping with anxiety or depression, or helping you to work through a particularly challenging time. BetterHelp is a great option if you're thinking of giving therapy a try. It's convenient, accessible, affordable, and entirely online. There's also a ton of ways to actually do the sessions. You can do video calls, audio-only calls, or you can even just message with your therapist if that's what you'd prefer. All you have to do is fill out a brief survey to get matched with a therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time. Plus, it's quick. You can be matched with a therapist in as little as 48 hours. So when you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can help you get there. Visit betterhelp.com/rooster today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/rooster to get 10% off your first month right now. Thanks, BetterHelp. Today's episode of the Rooster Teeth Podcast is brought to you by Delta Airlines. I was just out of town recently, went over to Las Vegas. It was great. Great to get out of the normal routine, see new things, come back totally refreshed, feel like a new person when I get home. And really, isn't that how every trip should be? Delta Airlines has some new premium experiences on the ground in the air that raise the bar sky high while you're on your way to your destination. The truth is, it's not just about where you're going. It's also about how much you enjoy the journey. Wherever you travel, a better experience awaits with Delta Airlines. They recently partnered with Peloton to offer new Classes in the Clouds collection that features guided breathing exercises and stretches led by Peloton instructors, and a revamped beverage lineup featuring independent suppliers like premium herbal teas from Thrive Farmers, Explore Cool Brew, Une Femme Sparkling Wine, and more. Also with Delta Airlines, you'll enjoy premium products that are better for people and the planet, like the Delta One bedding sets that are now made with more than 100 recycled plastic bottles each and stowed in new reusable bedding bags. They've replaced single-use plastics with new bamboo cutlery and have plans to upgrade their tableware made from biodegradable material and premium paper placemats. Wherever life takes you, travel well with Delta Airlines. Visit delta.com/travelwell to learn more. Thanks, Delta. Safe travels. This episode of the Rooster Teeth Podcast is brought to you by Honey. These days, it feels like online shopping is the only shopping that we really do. It's my personal favorite. We've all seen that promo code field taunt us at checkout, but thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is the free browser extension that scours the internet for the best promo codes and applies them directly to your cart. And it works with over 30,000 online stores that range from gaming and tech to popular fashion brands, even food delivery. Here's how it works. You get Honey on your computer for free in 2 easy clicks. Then when you're checking out at one of its over 30,000 supported sites, Honey pops up, tells you all you have to do is click apply coupons. If Honey finds working codes, it'll apply the best one to your cart, then watch the price magically drop. It's that simple. Just the other day, my wife was actually buying some sunglasses online. She saw the little apply coupon. It worked. I think she saved like 40% off of what she was going to spend on those. Absolutely awesome. Honey has found its over 17 million members, over $2 billion in savings. That's billion with a B. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free, installs in just a few seconds. By getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid, supporting the show. Get honey for free at joinhoney.com/rooster. That's joinhoney.com/rooster. I flew out of the Austin airport on Tuesday, so I missed the power outages. However, I had something happen to me that I've never had happen before.
You had too much power.
I had too much power. Yeah, we stole it. We took it with us.
That's Gus in a nutshell.
I was going to fly from... definitely not. I was going to fly from Austin to Houston and Houston to Vegas. It was on United. Got on the plane, boarded, closed the door, pushed back, and we're sitting there, and Esther turns to me and goes, someone smells bad in here. I was like, oh, yeah, it does smell a little weird. And then, you know, we're waiting, and then the pilot comes on the PA. He's like, some people in the back of the plane have reported a strange smell. We're going to go ahead and go back up to the gate and, you know, have maintenance check it out. Like, okay, that's weird. I was like, well, maybe they'll check it out. In my head, I'm like, maybe it's just like the toilet or something.
That's what I would assume. Right. Yeah, like it's blocked up or something.
So, you know, we pull back up to the gate. They open the door. It's like 2 or 3 minutes, and they come on. They're like, yeah, everyone needs to go ahead and get off the plane. Like, all right, fine. So everyone gets off the plane, mm-hmm. and like everyone immediately is like getting in line to talk to the gate agents. I'm like, I'm gonna wait. It's probably just the toilet. They'll be done. Like, they just gotta clean the toilet out. It'll be like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Then they come on. They're like, yeah, maintenance is out there looking at the engines. They don't know what the problem is. They're like, oh shit, pulling out the app. Like, I gotta rebook. Yeah.
So what happened?
Ended up like rebooking on another flight, and I ended up only being delayed like 3 hours.
Okay.
Like, I ended up on like the next flight to Houston and the next flight to Vegas.
Rebook all you guys on that flight on like a new flight?
No, because they didn't know how long it was going to take.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think stinky engine is in the manual.
No.
Like an estimated time.
Just like looking out the window and just seeing like two guys just like hands on hips looking up at the engine and just like poking with a stick and then smelling the stick. Oh, fuck it. I'm rebooking.
This plane has COVID.
I am not doing this. Nice.
That's what I figured. It's like they're going to get guys out there like on... at the gate to look at the engine and troubleshoot it and figure like this.
You just see them going,
yeah, like, yeah, hey, what does that smell?
Does this smell? Just like I'm showing it to other people.
Why two fingers?
Yeah. Does this taste normal to you? Is that how the engine should taste? I'd never had that happen before. I was like, yeah, they're definitely going to get on a different plane. We'll see. And that plane looked old as fuck. Like, the paint was peeling everywhere.
Oh my God.
The inside was like that super dated, like
maybe it's time to retire
cracked
it.
Up seats. Yeah, it was.
Do you ever think you'll fly yourself to Vegas?
Ooh.
I probably could.
How many times would you refuel?
You'd probably, from here to Vegas, you'd probably have to stop twice.
That much? I guess you're in a small plane.
Yeah, in a small plane, you'd probably have to stop twice. Maybe once, but I wouldn't
like
want to stretch
here
it.
To El Paso, El Paso to Flagstaff, Flagstaff to Vegas.
Yeah, something like that.
Look at me.
Mm, look at you. Yeah, you have all the markers in your head.
You can talk the talk.
Speaking of smells. Where's
your uniform? It's safely stowed in the overhead compartment. Well, you talk the talk.
Classic. He said stowed in the overhead compartment. Speaking of smells, I saw this very interesting video the other day about this woman who her and her husband were just spending some time together one day where she noticed he was smelling off, like musky kind of. Uh-huh. But no one else was able to smell anything different about him. Mm-hmm. And apparently this went on for years and years and years, and he ended up developing Parkinson's disease, I believe.
Huh.
And it turns out this woman had an ability to smell Parkinson's disease.
No, dogs can do that, right? So
what? Can they?
I think so.
But like she was able to essentially, like they did a test where she would smell people's clothes and identify who of the people's clothes she was smelling, who had Parkinson's disease. And there was one she got wrong, but that person developed Parkinson's disease years later.
Wow.
She like pre-smelled it?
What? Yeah.
Do you think that...
Like, well, she smelled it on her husband before he was diagnosed with it, like for years.
Do you think that...
something in the sweat then, like chemical.
The world is a living hell for her because her nose is so highly sensitive. Like she smells everything.
She's Bruce Willis in Unbreakable, only for smells. She like can go around and tell.
But like, I want to go find this person and have her spell me and like all my friends and be like,
she's like, give me 20 bucks.
Yeah.
I mean, is Parkinson's something you can prevent?
I probably not.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I guess it's.
I think like if you like catch it early, you can start treatment earlier, which like delays the progression of the disease.
Yeah.
I believe.
I don't really know much about it,
but wild. That's. But they do that for dogs too. Like dogs can sense smell. They have like diabetes mm-hmm. assistant dogs, which can like tell who the dogs know when your blood sugar is low and stuff because they have.
Can't they also? Weren't there dogs that could smell COVID?
Yes,
sure.
And I think some to smell cancer as well. Like if you train a dog, like, their noses are really powerful.
Yeah.
They can find, I think, just about anything.
Our
except
noses
Jimmy Hoffa.
Are useless.
He's good garbage. Yeah. So, cool. Another cool animal fact, folks. Raccoons, their sense of touch is as sensitive a sense as our eyesight. That's why when raccoons get like food, they like put it in water, which enhances their sense of touch.
Oh.
And they can feel around to know what they're touching.
So that famous cotton candy video.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because yeah, they their sense of touch is as good a sense as our eyesight. So they have like,
I almost like
echolocation
even
with their fingers.
Yeah, imagining them just doing this and just building this massive 3D mental
image
of the thing they've
they
doing.
Really are, yeah.
You could hook them up to a computer and that could be a really cheap 3D scanner. Wow. Just get a raccoon to hold something and it'll build the 3D model on your computer.
That's so... I did not know that.
Yeah.
Another fun fact that I'm going to store away for a future conversation.
I think I read the other day that the human sense of touch is so sensitive that it can detect, like, if you're rubbing your hand across something smooth, it can detect like pits or dents that are as small as 3 nanometers
mm-hmm.
in size.
Mm-hmm. Like, a human can?
A human touch. Like, it's mm-hmm. that sensitive to...
I can't do that.
to changes and differences in yep. sensation.
Like, nanometers, though.
Yeah, let me look it
it's
up.
It's like a billionth of a...
length of a hair.
but it's 3 of them. I take it back. Difference is down to 13 nanometers, not 3.
Well, then never mind.
That's crazy.
Is everyone at home watching this right now just slowly touching the surface in front of them or like their phone just to see if they can do it? Because that's what I've been doing this entire time.
It's like, ooh, there's a nice texture on this
table. I
feel
these little bumps. These little nanometers. What?
These nanometers.
Nanometers.
When I was out of town, this is my time to bitch about the Postal Service. when I was out of town, I don't know if you all ever do this. There's a service with the Postal Service called Hold Mail. If you're going to be out of town,
mm-hmm.
you can hold your mail. Mm-hmm. In theory, they don't deliver your mail.
I'm guessing they delivered your
Why
mail.
Why do you want that?
So your mailbox doesn't get filled with a bunch of shit, and it doesn't look like you're
not
home. Right.
Yeah.
Get rid of the mailbox.
I would love to.
Have a letterbox.
So, what?
Like through the door.
Oh, okay. Mail slot.
Because then you'd have to worry unless your entire house fills up with
exactly.
mail.
Exactly.
Yeah, or get a mailbox the size of like an R2 unit and you just like throw it in there.
So they delivered my mail every day I was gone.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one of those mailboxes, not that kind that open on the front, but the kind that open up, that flip up on the top.
Sure.
The mailman also left the box open.
During the rain.
It rained repeatedly, and every single piece of mail that they delivered that they weren't fucking supposed to was ruined.
Did you get anything important?
I got a letter from my insurance, which I don't know what it said because I can't read it. and there was one other. Oh, and I got a bill from a doctor. I don't know how to pay it. So this is my evidence.
I mean, you could call the doctor and just say, hey, I got this bill. I
can't. No. I'm gonna bitch.
Here's the best part. They'll keep mailing you the bills. Don't worry. You'll get another one.
Don't worry. Indeed.
It's like, no, you were, so when you got home, you were treated to a nice mailbox full of paper pulp.
There used to be mail. Granted, most of it was trash, 95% of it was trash, but there were two things that I fucking needed. And,
can I make a deal with the postman, with the mailman, and just try and get him to not mail all of that shit into my mail?
I would love that.
There's like a lot of that junk mail, you could call a number on it to ask to stop receiving it. Like,
I don't want to do any work. I just want to not get it.
Yeah.
I just want the guy to be like, oh, this is all junk. And I just never see it. How much does that service cost?
You probably have to pay more than the companies are paying to send it to you.
What you have to do is you have to catch your mail person out by the curb and go, there is a crisp $20 a month in it for you.
if you
just chuck this fucking shit in the garbage.
Literally.
Like,
I would pay a good 20 for that to stop happening.
20 a week?
Maybe not a week. Maybe 20 a month.
20 a month?
To get that to stop happening. Because I get so frustrated at the waste. That's the worst part for me. Like, whatever, if I get it, I could recycle the stuff. But it's just, we all know how recycling doesn't actually fucking happen
mm-hmm.
80% of the time, right? Like, recycling companies don't actually recycle shit. And they don't take care of it properly. But just like the amount of waste it takes to make those things and send them, and just all the energy that gets put into those things that essentially just get immediately tossed.
Mm.
And that some people throw them out.
And I burn all mine just to make it even more
To increase your carbon footprint.
Yeah, to really dig your heel into that carbon footprint. Just want to really leave.
I mean, if you're throwing it into your fireplace, you're using the energy, right?
Yeah, well, then I get all the ashes and I put it in the mail. And it just goes somewhere else.
Wow. Yeah.
Return to sender on the ashes.
You know, you should take one of those, like, return, like, you know how some things that mail you get like a return envelope, mm-hmm. to send something back? You just shit in it and just send it back. That'll probably make it stop, right?
No. All I'm going to do is get some like weird mail sorting robot full of turds.
You're just making a problem for someone else. Someone in that mail processing center is going to get that OCR on their screen. Like, yeah. What is this? Oh, man. When I was in Vegas, I went to that Meow Wolf installation, Omega Mart.
Oh, yeah.
It was really cool, and I was way too sober for that.
Oh.
My condolences.
Yeah, I was like, this is all really cool, but I haven't drank anything. I'm not on anything.
Right. You're like,
Yeah, mistakes were made here.
Is marijuana legal?
Yes.
In Nevada?
It is.
It is. Okay.
It's legal in a lot of places. You wouldn't think it would be legal.
Michigan was one of them.
Yeah.
That I recently found out.
Really?
About. Yeah. I was at a convention in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I found out from someone that it was legal there. And I was like, Michigan?
You don't say. There's a couple places. There's one state recently legalized edibles.
But only edibles,
and it was because they didn't read the bill carefully.
That's Texas kind of has something similar where there's this strain called Delta 8, which there's a loophole that makes it legal in Texas,
mm-hmm.
or probably, I don't know how many places, but you could also, I think, sell edibles that have Delta 9, which I think is like more normal THC,
mm-hmm.
but it's because there has to be like a certain weight limit to it, which is why they can't sell like the flower. But edibles, if it has like a certain amount per serving or something, it's like there's a loophole that makes it
I think
legal
it has to be
to sell.
Derived from hemp, if I remember right.
Yes. Yes. But it's also still like some weight thing. I don't really understand it. Other people understand it way better than I do, but.
Yeah. It's just like.
Just make it legal.
Here's my controversial opinion. Either make it completely legal across the board, across the United States, or make it illegal everywhere and cool again. Because there used to be some like a little bit of a cool mystique about it now, but now because it's like widely available in so many places, it's like you go to LA and it's like going to the Apple Store to get weed. Mm-hmm. It's just like what the hell? What?
And it costs as much.
And it's just as much. Yeah, it's just like a very strange experience. But yeah, I don't know. I know there's like some loopholes around it in Texas, but it's just yeah. I don't know what they are, but I had the very same similar experience when I saw Multiverse of Madness, the Sam Raimi mm-hmm. one. I saw it totally sober and I was like, fuck, I should have not seen this straight. We don't have to talk about that movie, but man, what a mistake not seeing it altered in some way.
I didn't either. I watched it at home, you know.
Yeah.
it was on stream. I was like, I think I had the same thought, like, yep, this would have been really trippy.
What else did you guys do in Vegas while you're there? You're there for a couple days.
Yeah, there for a few days. Like did some gambling, but mainly it was for eating.
Yeah.
Going to a bunch of different restaurants. I went to that Omega Mart thing, which was actually, I don't want to sound it like it was bad mm-hmm. or anything. It was actually really super cool. I tried not to look into it too much before I went, just to avoid spoiling it. Not that there's anything to spoil, but I wanted to be surprised
by
things.
Yeah, you want to have the experience when you're there.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was super cool, super trippy. Stopped by a legal hemp shop, legal weed shop on the way there, probably for an enhanced experience.
Yeah.
I went to this other thing. I was walking through like the shopping area right by the Aria. It's called Crystals. And they had this thing called like the Van Gogh experience. I was like, what's that? Is it, they have like Van Gogh art or something, or like some kind of Van Gogh museum? I was like, all right, again, I don't know. I'm walking by like, they're starting, it's right here. Let's go in. So my wife and I went to that. We went in again, not knowing what it was. And it was like, you walk into this big room that has mirrored, it's like huge. The room itself is probably like the length of this stage that we're in from like that parking lot to that parking lot.
Oh, wow.
And maybe like double the width of the broadcast area.
Holy
so
shit.
It's massive. And you go in and like there's support columns that are like covered in mirrors, and
like
there's
Ikea.
Like like a box. Yeah, there's like a box, like a room in the middle that's covered in mirrors, and there's like benches all scattered around the room, like, and then there's they're like projecting sunflowers, like Van Gogh sunflowers. Ooh. All in the walls. Like, what the fuck is this?
You take any photos?
A couple, I can show you.
Yeah. Then they cut your ear off.
And we saw
the whole experience.
We sat down and we're there for like 5-10 minutes, and we're like, is this it? Are we just gonna like stare in this room at sunflowers forever? And then like the music starts, and then like the sunflowers start changing. Like, oh, okay. And they start like projecting various pieces of Van Gogh art onto the walls set to music, and they like kind of shittily animated parts of it where like stuff's moving, and they're like trying to tell a story through this art. And I was like, this is garbage.
Oh, really? You didn't like it, huh?
Well, because I felt, I'm not like a fine art person by any stretch of the imagination, but I was always under the impression that the point of art is for you to look at it and for it to make you think and unlock your thoughts.
Right.
Viewing it in this setting was like someone else had programmed the music, had put together animation, and was like trying to tell a story through the art. So it's like the thoughts are being made for you. It's like your thoughts are put onto rails.
Oh.
As to what to think and what to feel as you're watching this thing. And I was like, I fucking hate everything about this.
I'm sure there's some people who love it.
I'm sure there are.
On rails thinking.
Yeah. It was I don't have to do any work.
It was not for me. I was like, and we, you know, we, like I said, we sit down. At first, it's like the sunflowers and everything, and they're showing different art. And then like halfway through, I'm like, they're going to end on Starry Night. Starry Night's the finale. I know it.
Of
and
course.
Yeah, sure enough, like at the very end, like the music swells. Like at one point they're playing like Adagio for strings, and I'm like, fucking shoot me.
It's just like, man, I really appreciate it. It's like, guys, we need to really start thinking inside the box here. We need to get, we need very straight linear processes.
Tell them what to think.
Yeah.
I can see people in chat are disagreeing with me. Some people really like it. Again, yeah. Just not my thing. It was, well, I just felt like I was being railroaded into like a specific way of thinking, like this is the presentation
sure.
for you, instead of looking at it, appreciating it, and thinking on your own about it.
Yeah. Right. It's like, I like movies for that. I like movies more for that reason, where it's like, oh, this is like a narrative that I'm being like drawn into, and like a story is being told and everything. But with like museums, fine art, stuff like that, or like paintings and stuff, I really do like the, like just a personal affecting experience with like, let me see this thing. Let me experience this thing, like on my turn or on my terms, and like draw from it and have it affect it. You know, have it affect me mm-hmm. in that moment in that way.
I always feel like such an imposter whenever I go to any sort of like museum or like art exhibit, because I'm like taking everything in and like looking at everything and reading descriptions and what the artist was thinking or whatever it is they have like next to the paintings. But I also feel like I'm an alien trying to act like a human in those situations. I'm just like, yes, I will slowly walk around this exhibit and spend this amount of time looking at this painting. Yes, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then like
the
walk over here to look at that one and spend this amount of time.
You count in your head, like you look at the painting, like one?
15, yeah, like two, how long is acceptable three, to stand in front 15. Of this one so the other people wouldn't think?
I kind of just do what other people are doing too. But it's definitely one of those situations where I'm just like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I just don't have like that's art sensibility that some people do when they go to exhibits like that, and they try to think through.
But I feel like I don't have any sensibility about that either. But like my goal when I look at something like that is like try to see what were they trying to capture, and does it make me feel anything?
Yeah,
like what does it evoke in my experience of life, and is there a connection I can make to it?
Yeah, I guess I just don't have a soul or something. Well, so
true,
stuff
yeah.
is missing.
Well, you're Canadian.
Yeah,
that's it.
I'm not a ginger. All right,
you just have a ghost.
that's one of the things that always strikes me, usually the first thing with a lot of like experiences with art, especially like seeing like some of my favorite artists and my favorite paintings, is the size of them.
Mm-hmm.
Which like I never, like Caravaggio is one of my favorite artists, old master, and I got to see a Caravaggio exhibit in Chicago one time and went in this hall of these paintings. And of course, I've only seen them on a screen, picture, a JPEG. So it's all like this big. Then you walk in and it is a humongous painting of like the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. Painters of Light. Like just like one of the most unbelievable. And like that was legitimately, like I cried. Like it was moving to see those paintings in life.
In scale.
And in scale. Like it was just like.
Yeah. Do you think it has a greater effect on you because you can paint? and you actually have that ability?
That was like 15 years ago. That was before I even picked up a paintbrush.
You didn't even know you could paint?
No, I didn't know. This was like years ago.
Well, you probably always had that artistic bone in you to some degree.
Maybe. I think it was just like under, like the both the subject matter, which is like, oh, usually with Caravaggio is usually pretty religious, but then like just like the forms and figures and like being able to like render it, it's just like appreciation for like, I think, you know, on like the small scale, just like appreciation for something that was created from nothing.
Yeah,
it was like this at one time was like a stretched canvas like 15 feet diameter that then became like this unbelievably
There's
gorgeous
also
scene.
The alternative too, which I've seen, like the Mona Lisa, I think is a lot smaller.
Yeah,
than you think like, it would be like in person, the actual painting is like,
it's not big at all.
This big, mm-hmm. but like in my head, it's like
massive.
It's larger than life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you see it in person, you're like, oh, it's so tiny.
In
so little.
In chat, that guy named J-Lo said that they like to speedrun museums and try to see how many paintings they can see in one day, in one visit.
That's really funny.
And also the thing, one of the things I like about museums too, art gallery, like the Met in New York and the Chicago Museum of Art and stuff is like, you'll be walking through it and you'll see, you'll like walk past, there some paintings they like give like a big spotlight, like go, like the Mona Lisa, it's like bum 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 bum, this is the painting you came here to see.
Yeah.
And then,
and it's just all these people with their phones up,
their phones taking a photo they'll never look like, at again. But then like you'll go to like the Chicago Museum of Art and it's just like you'll walk past like a masterpiece, which is next to just like another, I mean, amazing painting, but like a, well, like you'll walk past like water lilies and then it's just next to just another painting that you've never heard. There's like, it's so strange to have like this, the context of these pieces that are just like breathtaking masterpieces that, you know, are super, super famous.
Next is some Joe Schmo over here.
Whereas like, this is the janitor. He got it, but we gave him, we let him put up a painting in here. Like, yeah, it's just like, it's just strange to be walking and be like, okay, well, there's a ship on the ocean. It's beautiful, and there's just one of the most famous paintings of all time.
Yeah,
right next to it. Just like, okay, yeah. Cool.
What is the thought process in? I don't. It's not programming, but like
curating.
There you go. Curating.
Yeah, like, making stacks of like what are clearly fodder paintings to put in between. Like,
yeah, we don't have like too many famous paintings in one space, right?
Right. You got to make people walk around the whole thing, get their money's worth.
Speaking of paintings, did you see that in Steve Merchant's newest show? I can't remember that. I think it's called Outcast or something, or something similar.
I have no idea.
Christopher Walken is in it, and his character accidentally either like cleans or paints over a Banksy, like while they're outside doing work. But it was a real Banksy. Like,
really?
Steve Merchant got Banksy to put a painting there like weeks before they shot there, and then they like uncovered it and did the whole thing. And I'm not sure if the cast knew it was real.
Yeah.
I haven't actually seen the show. I need to watch it. But it was like, it was an actual official Banksy.
Oh my God.
That Christopher Walken painted over a real Banksy. So it's like a legend is like painting over another legend's work.
I also wonder how you get in contact with someone like Banksy, who's anonymous, right? Like no one knows who Banksy is.
Know. I think a lot of people know who that
you
is.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah.
But just like, does Banksy, does he have an email address? Does he have a contact info like on his Instagram page?
Right. He's like Bill Murray has like a home phone that you like have to leave a message on.
Yeah.
To like you don't ever actually talk to him. Banksy. He doesn't have an agent.
He's actually sent everyone mail. You just have to fill out one of those return envelopes.
Uh-huh.
And they all go to him.
It all goes to you actually and then gets rained on.
Yep.
I think just to continue the art discussion, some of the coolest
outlaws.
Art
Sorry,
I've ever seen. Outlaws. Okay, cool. Not Outcast.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about. Outlaws. But yeah, I was half right.
I don't know who the artist is, but they do 3D sculptures, but like really huge, like faces and heads and humans and like to the point where like a nose would be, you know, 5 feet long and like 3 feet wide or something like that. I don't know if you know this artist, mm-mm. but I've seen some of their work in person and it's like, that shit is so cool because it is insanely detailed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you're a mini little thing on like the cheek of a real human being and you're
right.
like looking at all the detail of it. I have to look up who that artist is.
But. That also is something, just to, you know, along with painting, but also like sculpting. It's like when you see like really amazing sculptures where like veins in arms are like like articulated in marble. It's just like
the marble work is what always gets me when you look at like a Michelangelo or
something
crazy. Like, How did, or like, well, I forget what the sculpture is, but it's like, there's a, anytime there's like a woman with like a veil over her face, and you're like, how did you make rock look like cloth over a person's face?
Over form.
Right.
Yeah.
When I went to Italy and saw a bunch of art that was like marble statues and stuff like that, I had the exact same thought. I'm like, how do you do that? How do you make it look like soft cloth?
And my, like, in my mind, it's like, you're like, well, that's 7 years. And I guess this one doesn't have a leg. Like,
is that how the one with the was it Venus without the arms?
Yeah, the arms were just total disaster. That's why they got rid of them. Yeah.
The artist didn't know how to make hands.
Yeah. It was originally just like claws, like nubs.
If he nailed the hands and arms, but they were just in like a slightly wrong pose? So you just look really rigid and stupid.
Did you? Why is the left hand on the right arm and the right hand on the left arm? Did you see that YouTube video of the guy sculpting Mel Gibson's DUI arrest?
No.
But the reason I bring it up is it makes me think about what you just said, where he made like a little diorama that's maybe, you know, like twice the size of my laptop, like not huge, but not small. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like that he like imagined what it was like the night Mel Gibson got pulled over and arrested for DUI.
Uh-huh.
And he started out by making the Mel Gibson sculpture first. And he did like, he sculpted like a human-sized head of Mel Gibson, which looked phenomenal, then 3D scanned it to then make it like smaller so that it was like it fit in his tiny diorama. Like he goes through the whole process to make this huge head to then just like 3D scan it and then shrink it down. It's a great video. It's like 20 minutes long. The guy's just narrating the whole time as he's making this diorama. It's a fucking great video. I started watching and I was like, this seems like a waste of time. And then like 20 minutes later, you're like, oh, that was a wonderful journey. I'm glad I watched that. Glad I watched that video.
I'm eating my words.
Yeah. Gus, I wouldn't call this like an old man moment. No, I would call it an old man moment. I wouldn't say accidentally. This is a lot of preamble. This is a lot of preamble. It's a lot of track to lay.
I love it.
I went down a rabbit hole. That's not accidentally, because you go looking for something and it eventually takes you to something. So it's not accidentally.
So this was purposeful.
This was purposeful. It started out, I was looking up something, I was doing some research for something.
Okay.
And I eventually started watching on YouTube gold panning videos.
Oh, okay.
Old men out in rivers with a little like disc panning for gold. And it is the most relaxing. I'm like, I gotta do this.
I'm definitely gonna watch that.
Is that like your ASMR?
It's not even like ASMR too, because they're like talking and they're like telling you like what it's like, telling you what they're doing and how like the process of like gold panning in a river. And it's like, not only is the video like I like was compelled by the videos, because there is, you kind of like get that secondhand like looking for little like gold like flakes and like mm-hmm. little bits of like gold in there, but just like the process of like sitting by a river, like in waders, just like methodically, like being out in nature. There's something about that. I was like, I got to do this. I want to go get in a river and do this.
I think you're
like,
going to.
I think I probably will.
I think that's
will.
Your next step.
I'm just going to be like a mile up river, just dumping gold glitter into the
just pouring